One day, your life will flash before your eyes. Make sure it is worth watching. Welcome, everyone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Kenneth Wong is our host. He's an author, teacher, and itinerant speaker. Well, earlier this week, with the focus on Abraham, Kenneth suggested that life can begin at 75. We learned that our lives have not really begun, nor are they truly significant, until we obey God's call. You know, life can also begin at 80, as we learned yesterday with a look at Moses. Well, today, Ken concludes his series on Never Too Old with a look at Caleb, who at the age of 85 said, "Give me that mountain." It would seem that as long as we have breath in our bodies, we are never too old. So on that day when your life flashes before your eyes, now is the time to make sure it is worth watching. In just a moment, Kenneth presents part three of Never Too Old.
Hello, everyone. It's really a joy to be with you. And if you have just joined us in this third and final part of our series, Never Too Old, well, it's never too late. In part one, we considered how Abraham started out at 75 by faith. And in part two, we saw how Moses was called out at 80. And for the third and final part today, we shall see how Caleb reached out at the amazing age of 85 in hope. As in the previous studies, we are going to toggle between different parallel accounts in the scriptures so that we get a fuller picture of the whole story. And we are going to toggle between Joshua chapter 14 and Numbers chapter 13. In the aftermath of the tragic and critical turning point at Kadesh Barnea, which is recorded in Numbers 13, when the children of Israel refused to go into the promised land, in spite of the exhortation of Caleb and Joshua, who were two of the 12 men sent to spy out the land by Moses. This was God's indictment on their disobedience and disbelief. In Numbers chapter 14, verse 26, "And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, 'How long shall I bear with this evil congregation who complain against me? I have heard the complaints which the children of Israel make against me. Say to them, as I live, says the Lord, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I will do to you. The carcasses of you who have complained against me shall fall in this wilderness. All of you who were numbered according to your entire number from 20 years old and above, except for Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun, you shall by no means enter the land which I swore I would make you dwell in. But your little ones whom you said would be victims, I will bring in, and they shall know the land which you have despised. But as for you, your carcasses shall fall in this wilderness, and your sons shall be shepherds in the wilderness 40 years, and bear the brunt of your infidelity until your carcasses are consumed in the wilderness. According to the number of the days in which you spied out the land, 40 days, for each day you shall bear your guilt 1 year, namely 40 years, and you shall know my rejection. I, the Lord, have spoken this. I will surely do so to all this evil congregation who are gathered together against me. In this wilderness they shall be consumed, and there they shall die.'" As a result of that tragic turnaround by unbelief and disobedience, an entire generation, or the Exodus generation, was lost, and they comprised all who had been numbered 20 years or older, who did not survive the 40 years of wilderness wanderings except for Joshua and Caleb. So when Joshua finally led them into the actual conquest of Canaan, it was with a relatively younger generation below the age of 60. The Exodus generation died in disbelief in the wilderness, while the Joshua generation took possession of the promised land by faith. Although Caleb was not included in the great hall of faith of Hebrews 11, he was no less a spiritual giant of faith and hope. He had waited patiently for 45 years to see his faith in God vindicated. He had outlived and outlasted all the gainsayers and the naysayers of his generation. Let's read this account in Joshua chapter 14 from verse 6 through to 12, where I would like to consider first of all the aspect of Caleb's position. And this is best described by the phrase, wholly followed the Lord, which we shall find in that passage. Position, wholly followed the Lord. Joshua chapter 14, verse 6. Then the children of Judah came to Joshua in Gilgal. And Caleb the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said to him, "You know the word which the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me in Kadesh Barnea. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought back word to him as it was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed the Lord my God." So Moses swore on that day, saying, "Surely the land where your foot has trodden shall be your inheritance and your children's forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord my God." Verse 10, "And now behold, the Lord has kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years, ever since the Lord spoke this word to Moses while Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now here I am this day, 85 years old. As yet I am as strong this day as on the day that Moses sent me. Just as my strength was then, so now is my strength for war, both for going out and for coming in. Now therefore, give me this mountain of which the Lord spoke in that day. For you heard in that day how the Anakim were there, and that the cities were great and fortified. It may be that the Lord will be with me, and I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said." So here we find Caleb at the grand old age of 85, recounting the fateful event of 45 years ago, when he was only 40 years of age. Now I want you to note the first person narrative that we have read. He was recounting the event as if Moses had sent him and he had given the report together with the rest of the 12. This indicates a personal faith which is not dependent on or influenced by others. It has been said that one with God is a majority, and no one personifies this better than the person of Caleb. I want particularly to focus on the phrase, "wholly followed the Lord," which is used to describe Caleb three times in Joshua chapter 14. This is in verse 8 and 9 from which we have read, and again in verse 14, where it says, "Hebron therefore became the inheritance of Caleb the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite to this day, because he wholly followed the Lord God of Israel." This passage in Joshua chapter 14 describes the division of the land that had been occupied so far by the Joshua generation, after they had crossed the Jordan and began their occupation of the promised land. Caleb was the first to appear on behalf of the tribe of Judah as its leader, probably because he was the most senior among the leaders of the tribes. And that phrase, "wholly followed the Lord," is especially associated with him. It's an apt summary statement of his life. Caleb followed fully and not partially all the days of his life. He was wholehearted and not half-hearted in his following of the Lord. It means being single-minded with no holding back. It describes an undeviating and undiluted faith in God. It involves total commitment with no half measures. It's faith to the hilt. It's believing all the way or not at all. Remember what I said about faith in an earlier message. It's the disposition that determines direction, which in turn leads to destination. In contrast to Caleb, who was the example of someone who wholly followed the Lord, Lot is an example of one who did the opposite. He did not wholly follow the Lord, with the eventual tragedy that he did not follow at all. So that's the first aspect to consider about Caleb's character, his position, that he wholly followed the Lord. Secondly, I would like to consider this aspect, his perception. And we have these words in the passage that we are going to read to describe it. Well able to overcome. His perception, well able to overcome. Let's backtrack and rewind the narrative 45 years back, from Joshua 14 to that fateful day and the critical turning point in the journeys of Israel in the wilderness after Moses had led them through the Exodus from Egypt. And we find this in Numbers chapter 13. Caleb, together with Joshua, were part of a 12-man reconnaissance mission team sent out by Moses to spy out the land of Canaan, with each of the 12 tribes being represented by a man. Let me read to you from Numbers chapter 12, verse 17. Then Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said to them, "Go up this way into the south and go up to the mountains and see what the land is like, whether the people who dwell in it are strong or weak, few or many, whether the land they dwell in is good or bad, whether the cities they inhabit are like camps or strongholds, whether the land is rich or poor, and whether there are forests there or not. Be of good courage and bring some of the fruit of the land." Now the time was the season of the first ripe grapes. At the conclusion of the mission, we continue to read in Numbers chapter 12, verse 25. "And they returned from spying out the land after 40 days. Now they departed and came back to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Then they told him and said, 'We went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks of the Jordan.'" What they had just done was what expected of every reconnaissance team when they had been debriefed to give a report of the intelligence and the information that they had collected. They had gathered and reported on the facts, the observations, and on the information, and even brought clusters of fruits from the land as evidence. But that is where the similarity ends. They all had the same evidence, but widely differing interpretations, perceptions, and conclusions. They were sharply divided opinions and polarized positions between the yes party, which included just two, Joshua and Caleb, and the nay party of the other 10. In verse 30, we find Caleb firing the first salvo. He took the initiative and was the first to speak his mind. And he said this, "Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, 'Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it.'" And that's where I took that phrase from to describe his perception for this section. He stilled and quieted the people from fleshly excitement and all the curiosity, which can never take anything by faith. Caleb's first and immediate words were those of action. He had inferred from the appreciation of situation and the observed facts that this is the time to go. Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it. He needed no further analysis or persuasion. It was absolutely clear to him what needed to be done and what the next step should be, because he had God's perception. He saw through God's eyes. This was a resounding positive note that, alas, rang hollow in the ears of those who heard it, that they were well able to overcome their enemies. Caleb was saying that it's not just possible, but that it was no problem at all. He was saying to his compatriots, "We're not just able, but we are well able to do it." This was not turning a blind eye or denying or ignoring obstacles, but rather of overcoming them. It's not a blind faith or a denial of difficulties, which can be presumptuous. This is not triumphalism or trumpeting our faith, but it's a real triumph of faith. It wasn't a case of optimism or self-confidence or enthusiasm, but it's a case of God's power and God's purpose, finding fruitful ground in a heart that wholly follows the Lord. If we wholly follow the Lord, we will be well able to overcome and to do. But contrast this to what the others had to say in the very next verse 31. "But the men who had gone up with him said, 'We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we, And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak, came from the giants. And we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight." While Caleb said, "We are well able to overcome," the rest said, "We are not able to go up against the people." There could not be two more contrasting positions than this: faithfulness and faithlessness. They did not appraise or appreciate the situation through God's eyes, but instead they made their own faulty assessment and reading of things in their own eyes. The crux of the issue is not whether their enemies were stronger than them, but whether God is stronger than their enemies. Sure, the external and the objective facts need to be taken into account, but they can only make meaningful, holistic, and realistic sense if we do so by taking into account the greater fact of God being with us. And that last verse, 33, is a telling summary statement. "We were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight." So beware of looking at self and the situation with our own eyes, because this sight is always depressing and deceiving. The three sons of Anak the giant in Hebron stood for the giants that stood in the way for the naysayers, which were in fact their unbelief and lack of faith. The absence of faith always brings about fear, which grows to make obstacles look larger than life, just like giants. We are told in another place in Numbers chapter 32, verse 9, and this is how detrimental and destructive a negative and wrong perception can be. We read elsewhere in Numbers chapter 32, verse 9, that these naysayers, they discouraged the heart of the children of Israel. And again in Joshua chapter 14, verse 8, they are the ones who made the heart of the people melt. Discouragement, like disease, can be endemic, as was on this occasion, for it wiped out an entire generation. Thirdly, we're going to look at the aspect of Caleb's possession. And this is marked by the phrase, "Give me this mountain." And we're now back in Joshua chapter 14. Caleb was not content to simply receive his share of the inheritance by lot during the division of the land. At the top of his mind was the blunt fact that they had yet to fully conquer the whole land, drive out all their enemies. They've had some success and conquests, but it was far from complete. Back in Joshua chapter 14, we have read earlier that this was the reason why God had kept Caleb alive and still as strong. It was for him to complete the unfinished task, to claim the unclaimed promises, and to take full possession of all that God had intended for them. It was to vindicate his faith and vision, which his teammates did not share with him 45 years ago, and his undiminished physical vigor matched his undimmed vision. Verse 11, "As yet I am as strong this day as on that day that Moses sent me. Just as my strength was then, so now is my strength for war, both for going out and for coming in." Verse 12, "Now therefore, give me this mountain of which the Lord spoke in that day." Caleb asked for a mountain to climb, a peak to conquer, an obstacle to overcome, a war to win at this advanced stage of his life, when most would have opted to stand down a long time ago. I'm sure all the others would have said that he well deserved to settle down in his allotted portion and live out the remaining days of his life in peace and contentment, perhaps reminiscing about the good old days. But not for Caleb. He particularly pinpointed the Anakims in verse 12. "For you heard in that day how the Anakim were there, and that the cities were great and fortified. It may be that the Lord will be with me, and I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said." He remembered what they symbolized for all the rest, the giants in their lives, and how they terrorized and paralyzed them into inaction. For 45 long years, he had patiently endured this thorn in the flesh of Israel, and he wasn't going to let this opportunity go and to die without seeing these giants slain or driven out. Hebron was his ultimate goal and objective. His stance remained unwavering and unchanging. They may be giants, their cities great and fortified, but it may be that the Lord will be with me, and I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said. He remained as simple and straightforward as ever in taking God at his word. He had his eye not on the obstacle, but on the overcoming. Verse 13, and Joshua blessed him and gave Hebron to Caleb the son of Jephunneh as an inheritance. When he received his personal inheritance from Joshua, he asked for the toughest city which remained untaken. He succeeded in driving out the same three sons of Anakim from those days so long ago. They were still around to taunt and mock Israel's fear and faithlessness. Caleb was fixed on ridding Israel of the demons of their past fears and failures. The last verse 15 of Joshua chapter 14. And the name of Hebron formerly was Kirjath Arba. Arba was the greatest man among the Anakim, and then the land had rest from war. We will have rest when the giants in our life are finally driven out or slain. So don't sit around waiting to claim some payout at the age of 85, but like Caleb, claim God's promises for the territories yet to be possessed in your life. Remember, it's never too late and we are never too old. And may God continue to refresh you by His presence and reach you by His word.
Even at the age of 85, Caleb longed to claim the unclaimed promises and take full possession of all that God intended. Thank you, Kenneth. This is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. And please join us again tomorrow when Ken presents part one of The Gospel Watershed. Right now, though, we would love to hear from you, and I have several ways through which you can be in contact. You can send us a text message at 9431-3813, or you can write to us at Post Office Box 392, Thompson Road, Post Office, Singapore 915-714. You can go to our Facebook page and leave your comments there or share some views with some of the other folks you see. Also, I invite you to visit our website, www.timesofrefreshing.asia, where you can listen to the program right online. And Times of Refreshing has launched an iPhone app that allows users to directly access the broadcast messages and the podcasts right from their iPhones. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again for Times of Refreshing.